The Intangible is a limited literary spherical lyrical audio anthology that denies defiling the deep where denizens dwell, which circles cirrus clouds like spinning circus clowns, while aiming errant arrows at the quo of the quay. Is this some kind of joke? Come, let us explore that meaty membrane which we must all one day pierce. We are happy to have you here, and even happier to keep you. Old farmhands.
I've seen a lot of things in my life, even a ghost once or twice, but the only time I ever saw true magic, it was probably the least magical reason you could think. Warts. This wasn't just some dumb old trick either. It was farmer magic, and it was real. When I was a kid, I had warts on my knees. First one knee, then the other. By the time this happened, I was 14, and both knees were lumpy with them. God. My mom took me to see Chucky and Jason that day. They lived down Orkin Road in Virginia, where I grew up. In the Northern Neck, I mean. They lived with their grandparents down Orkin Road. I did not. It was a small, chalk-white house with green shutters and tall pines all around, growing up from sandy soil. Out back, they had a pier so small you could barely lay down on it without getting wet, and you could spit across the creek if the wind blew just right. That's where Jim and Norma Maxfield lived, and where their mama had dropped them off one day until she got sorted out and found a new place to live. When we got there, they were gone. I guess their mama picked them both up and went back to Maryland. When we pulled in, Mr. Maxfield was out front and said he heard our truck coming up the road. It ran like a tank, though, even without a muffler. Whew. It was an old white Ford with a hole rusted through the floorboard and a sheet of plywood in the back, so old it grew sprigs of grass. I was bored and there was nothing to do down at the creek, just a small pier, but it was rickety and the bottom was stink mud. I'm sure they could tell, but they just kept talking. After a while, Jim stopped talking mid-sentence. Those warts? It was the first day worn shorts that year, and I was suddenly embarrassed about my knees. I know I turned pink in the cheeks. Yes, sir. How many? You got them anywhere else? No, sir. I'm going to do some magic. That all right with you? I only nodded because I was supposed to. I like magic, of course, but this sounded like doctor stuff. Will it hurt? He gave a deep chuckle. Only if you kick too hard. He winked and started rubbing his hands together, blowing into his palms like he had just come in from the cold. Gotta get him warmed up. It was June and I was wearing shorts, so it confused me. It must have worked, though, because his hands were scalding hot when he grabbed my leg and put one on my knee. He held it there for just a few seconds while he mumbled real low. Then he switched hands. He pressed on the warts pretty hard, too. Not enough to hurt, but enough to press them into my knee. He repeated the thing with his hands and the mumbling until both my knees were done. Jim seemed different that day, and it made me nervous. Standing there, it felt like reaching the bottom stair, but it's not. So your heart leaps when your foot doesn't touch it, except a long, slow version of that. He reached up for help standing as I gave him a forearm like I had been taught to do for old folks. He took it, but he didn't let go once he was up. Instead, he grabbed my arm with his other hand too, holding it pretty tight and got real close. His face was so close to mine, I thought our noses would touch, but they didn't. Real quiet, he said, "This is some old magic my grandpa taught me. Works every time. You go home and wash that knee with soap and water, both of them, and make sure you suds him up good. He looked at my mom and said, remind him. Then he said, after that, just forget him for about 6 weeks. Don't think about him at all. And by the time you remember, they'll be gone. Won't never come back. When he finally let go of my arm, I told him, sir, I don't know if I can, especially now that you said not to. Oh, he winked again. You'd be surprised what you can do when you don't try. He excused himself, saying he needed a nap. We said goodbye, and he went back on inside. We climbed in the old Ford pickup and drove home. Chucky and Jason's mama never brought him back from Maryland. I never saw him again. Mr. Maxfeld either. We took Norma up high after he died, and, well, that was the last time I saw her, too. When we got home, Mom reminded me to do what Mr. Maxfeld told me. I argued at first, but she said, when was the last time you washed your knees? I couldn't remember, so I did as I was told. With my habit of picking at my knees, I knew I was never going to forget about the warts for that long, but somehow, I did anyway. When I remembered them 7 or 8 weeks later, I was farting around in the barn and climbing hay bales when suddenly it popped into my head. I checked my knees and ran to the house as fast as I could. Mom, come look! Judging by her expression, she was more surprised than me. All she said was, well, I'll be danged. I guess it was farmer magic. I'm an old man now and never had a single wart since.
Isn't that a superpower we all wish we had? Although, I suppose it does have a specific appeal in some circles. Nonetheless, gross. Perhaps a bit of old-fashioned southern hospitality might make my jeebies stop hebeing. Oh God, this writer. Please, kick back, make yourself at home, and enjoy our next fun-filled story. An early spring grave.
It was an early spring in East Texas, the day I dug my grave. The world did not end on the day the world ended. And that was the last work with a shovel I was ever going to do. It was more than 6 years ago when the world came to an end. The last day, what we ended up calling it. Didn't happen all at once, not for everybody. But I reckon at least half of everybody dropped dead that first day. It happened faster than a cowboy clown could tie a rodeo knot. Not everything ended that day. Sure as shit came to a screeching halt. Bus drivers, train conductors, airline pilots, dead. Baseball players, newscasters, preachers, dead. Teachers, kindergarten classrooms, hermit crabs, all dead. Cyclists fell over dead. Photographers dropped their cameras dead. People doing the autopsies dead. Fell right over. Face first, one dead guy stacked on top of the next. It went on like that for the better part of 3 months, gradually tapering off before it finally stopped. But of course by then, those of us who remained had gotten used to seeing it. Could be drinking a beer with a buddy, laughing about some dumb joke he told him. He'd forgotten all about the last day. Next thing you knew, look over at him, his beer spilling out on the ground around his feet. His fist is pants. His chin is on his chest. Blank eyes staring at nothing. dead. I'm not superstitious, but I get the chills when I think about figuring up the days. I dug that way hole 6 feet deep in Nacogdoches mud on March 1st. Exactly 6 years and 66 days after the last day. Guess it's hard to tell if that means anything or not. My grave would remain empty for 41 days after I dug it. I didn't see any significance with that number. So maybe it's all just mumbo jumbo and we see what we want to see. 2 years in, and I was convinced that because of all the many times God had heard the slogan, he really did bless Texas. Far as anyone knew, Nacogdoches was the last place on Earth with anybody left alive. Had to be someplace, I guess. If God was doing the choosing, it made sense to spare the place where the people sang your praises the loudest. 4 years in, and I had changed my mind about it being a blessing. I'll tell you that much. Most certainly was not a blessing. Food was scarce, and all the animals had died just the same as us. Bugs and trees, too. Guess the lack of mosquitoes might have been a silver lining. And I do recall a time I'd have thought it was a blessing. It wasn't. Some people claimed it was aliens. Others claimed it was the devil. But let me tell you, didn't matter who claimed what. Because they dropped dead right there on the television anyway. The hunger didn't bother me much. What bothered me was the goddamn stink. There's a rotten stench of death everywhere you go. Can't get rid of it. When it first happened, there were so many bodies. We just dug giant trenches with the excavating equipment and bulldozed the bodies into the holes to hide them. There was too many to worry about putting them in a body bag or something. It was weeks and weeks of long days using that heavy machinery to get the job done. And that was with us all doing it in the fastest, sloppiest way possible. It was common to scrape down on folks' arms or legs, just pinch them off clean. We got used to it. That reeking odor, though, I can't get used to that. Even if my stomach wasn't sick the way it is, I doubt I'd have much of an appetite anyway. Because no matter what you tried to eat, you were going to taste rotten flesh. There was no one left to eat with anyway. And I never enjoyed eating alone. So it was just as well, I suppose. The only problem I had besides the smell was the boredom. No television, no electricity. Nobody left to chew the fat with. Feels like all I've done since the last day is dig holes. Grave after grave after grave. And now, I don't even have that. Mine was the very last one. The final grave. I couldn't tell you why I even bothered. I'd been burying people the whole time out of respect. For them, and for the smell. Since there was no one left but me, it didn't amount to a hill of beans if I laid there getting all putrefied and stinking up a patch of dirt. There wasn't any more animals to worry about eating my corpse. Once it got swolled up and turned all gray and green. And hell, getting ate up by feral dogs would have been the most excitement I've had in more than 10 months now. You might think it sounds funny, but when I took my shovel with me the first few times, I wasn't visiting my spot to start digging yet. I was doing it so my two best friends could get acquainted. As it turned out, didn't get along so well, which, in hindsight, I suppose makes sense with one of them being the dirt and the other one being a shovel and all. But I didn't think about it that way out here. Why would I? It rained the day I dug the hole, which pissed me off something fierce. I knew something like this would happen. I know how much it rains in East Texas in springtime, so I should have guessed it anyways. That hole had a solid foot of water down bottom of it, and I really wasn't sure what I could have done about it. I figured it wasn't going to slow down raining anyway, but still, I wasn't sure I could bring myself to lay down in the hole in the first goddamn place. Now that it was just a wet hole full of Nacogdoches mud, I really doubted I would like it much. It rained on day two. Also, and knowing I had 40 more days of this bullshit got under my skin like a seed tick on a dog's asshole. Oh well. At least I wouldn't be digging in the heat and humidity with the seed ticks now that I thought about it. Those last few days, I took my shovel out to my grave, sat on the edge. Them two were getting along better now. Seemed to have made peace with their circumstances. And I just sat there with my feet dangling over the edge, not doing much more than waiting for the time to pass. I couldn't recall any of the hymns we used to sing at church besides Amazing Grace. That one gets old and didn't feel appropriate, the three of us sitting there like that. So I just sang a tune my mama taught me back when I was still pissing yellow. I can almost remember the words to that one. I checked that muddy water every day to see how high or low it was. Didn't change too much. Didn't bother bailing it out neither. Sitting there staring at it, thinking about the rest of the world already being dead made me wonder why I even bothered. There was anybody else left. If somebody might have seen me, I reckon I'd rather be covered over with dirt. There wasn't nobody here to even feel it on the top. It was bad enough I was planning to lay myself down in the hole instead of somebody doing it for me. But I wasn't going to shovel myself in. Man would have to be crazy to do a thing like that. Maybe one day the wind will blow enough, saying my way to fill it right up. Sure it will, because all the plants are already wilted down in brown piles. It's only a matter of time before the roots give out, and there won't be anything to hold the earth together no more. Guess it's not even soil. There ain't no worms or nothing. Well, I've enjoyed shooting the breeze with y'all. Today's my birthday. I got some important plans now with a couple friends of mine. Y'all take care of yourselves. Don't listen to nobody if they tell you God bless Texas. It's bullshit. This ain't nothing but a curse through and through. Bye now.
What's one thing you wish you could say to someone, but you can't because they're gone? Could be a question, apology, and I love you. Anything at all, as long as for somebody you knew in life who's gone now.
Hey, it's been a while. Hope you're doing okay. I really miss you. I really do. I know that it's been a short while and like if things weren't really easy. I needed to make a choice, and that choice was saying goodbye to you. It wasn't easy for me, and I'm sorry if it brought you pain. I really didn't want to let go, but I had to make a choice. It was so easy talking to you. It felt like you were just a reflection of my soul. Things were just easy, and like, anything that we would talk about just seemed so natural. It felt so new. It felt so real, and happiness, you know. I really wish that wherever you are right now, you're doing great, and like, you've achieved all the dreams that you've always wanted to do. I'm not gonna lie, I do wish that maybe someday, somehow, we're gonna meet again down the road. But, you know, life is strange, and maybe those short moments we had, those times we spent together, was the only memory we have. And I do hope that I brought you happiness despite that short time. I do want to, like, somehow talk to you again, reach out to you, but I know it's not gonna be better. I know that I'm just gonna end up hurting you and myself again. And it's not fair. It's not fair for me and you. But damn, I really miss you. I really wish that I could spend one more time with you. Just forgetting about all the things that happened and just living in that moment with you. But we need to move on. I need to move on. But it's so hard because I can't stop thinking about you. Everything just seems so natural. I really miss you. And I hope that you found the love that you deserve, you know? I miss you so much. I really do. But this is better, I think. Maybe the timing was off. Maybe if things were different, you know, maybe things would have worked out well. I really wish I could spend more time with you, but I can't. And it's so unfair for you and me, because I know we're just gonna end up hurting each other again. And I can't do that to you. I can't. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for missing you and not moving on, because I know that I'm being so toxic to you right now. But this is something I'll live with, because you have been a gift to me. You've brought me happiness. You've brought me joy. And that genuine connection was something else. You were like a kindred spirit to me. I miss you. I really do. But I don't know. It's hard to not forget about you. It's hard to, like, not think about you. I miss you.
Nathan somersaulted backwards, twisting his body to his left as he went. He knew the ninja was going to advance. In fact, it was part of his ploy. He came up in a crouch and parried high as the enemy's katana arced down towards his head. Sparks erupted and Nathan responded with a sweeping kick at the ninja's black boots. The black-clad assassin leapt back and avoided the kick, but the defensive maneuver allowed enough time for the hero to regain his footing. The exchange was going exactly how Nathan wanted. Now, a cartwheel to the side. The ninja would thrust. Nathan would parry and twist. Then a final upward swing to finish the opponent. He figured he could eliminate this enemy and get Fair Lady and himself to safety before the rest of the horde arrived. The two gladiators locked eyes. There was a mutual respect between the two, but both knew this battle was mortal. Nathan tensed his muscles, preparing to launch into his next flurry of movement when he heard Fair Lady call out,
"Nathan Alexander, knock it off with the roughhousing."
"But Mom, I just wanted to save you from all the ninjas."
"Have you picked up your toys like I asked?"
They were gonna hurt you, and no one hurts my mom."
"Your father will be here soon."
You've been listening to The Intangible, an audio literature program of Weird Fiction. Can you imagine an imaginary menagerie manager imagining managing an imaginary menagerie? This was not a fever dream.
Not even close.
God damn it, why?
Real bad. Thing is, it keeps getting worse till one day you die.
Does it get worse after that?
I don't know, kid. I sure hope so.